Seller, agelessness. Lecture number 20. Agelessness is perfection. How about that? Agelessness is perfection. Now, what is perfection? Agelessness is perfection because there is nothing to compare it with. Agelessness is perfection. To divine perfection, define perfection, requires there be an archetypal prototype of itself. Agelessness is perfection because I conceive perfection as the ideal. Agelessness is perfection. Now, what are you thinking about agelessness? What do you believe about agelessness? What does agelessness say to you? Does it say that you are ageless? Does it say to you that you are eternal, immortal, everlasting? Now we saw the tuck, everlasting, wasn't it?
Yes.
Is that the name of it?
Yes.
Tuck Everlasting movie last night. We've seen it many times before. And in the Tuck Everlasting movie, the family drank from the everlasting stream of eternal life. And instead of being devoutly, desirably happy about it, they were depressed. They were depressed because they had no values. Oh, they had the Christian values. They had the values of a normal family, of a normal community, of a normal life, of worshiping relationships, of worshiping possessions, of worshiping all things in their life. And when the boy went to war and in the various wars and killed people, the father said, "Did that make you happy, going out and killing people? You cannot be killed, but you kill them. Does that make you happy?" Now, that question should have never come up. If that family had that gift, and that gift should come with a certain amount of something about it, something, wisdom perhaps, a certain amount of wisdom, it should say to them, "We have a chance to make a mark on the universe by being an example of goodness, being an example of joy, not in public light where we'll be seen as who?" Who's that great saint we talk about? At Mount Shasta? Saint Germain? Now, if Saint Germain were to appear today, we'd say, "Oh, that's somebody taking the name Saint Germain." In fact, in the phone book, you find many Saint Germains. And you say, "Oh, he hasn't lived immortally. He hasn't lived forever. He's just, you know, a new a body coming from a new family, and that's a new Saint Germain." But what if it wasn't so? What if it was really himself revealing himself in the body of that being with the name Saint Germain on this plane in this lifetime? What if it were really so? What if he were really Tate Everlasting? What if he were really that person who had that gift? And what would he do? What would he do? Do you think, in the first place, if Saint Germain were playing the game, that he would die at any time? Or would he just disappear? Mm-hmm. Is there ever a funeral, or is there ever a burial stone for Saint Germain?
No.
People who with the name Saint Germain, but not Saint Germain. There's no burial stone for him, because he just moves on. He just flows into whatever dimension and direction delight him. And billions of other people do too. I mean, this world's been going along for a long time. There's a lot of bodies that have come and gone, and people who have done things, and they have just not died. They just move their body on. Or, you know, you have any capacity you want. If you're living and you let yourself appear old so that you would age with your family, and then you decide, hey, I like being on this planet Earth. I like being right where I am. I mean, I enjoy this game. Then you say, okay, I'm going to be Paramahansa Yogananda. You know? I'm going to reincarnate. I'm going to be living in that family, and I'm going to be living in this family. Remember, if you read the autobiography of Yoga, he tells about how he lived in one family, and then he moved to another family. And then he told his parents of the other family that he had lived in the other family, and he went back to the other family, things which he could not have known, and all the things that he said were true. It's a game, but that's okay. I mean, he shouldn't have said anything. It wouldn't have made any difference to anybody, but it was part of his game. It was part of the story of he was a special person. Well, we all are special persons. We all are outstanding, fantastic beings, but we don't act like it. No. Gertrude, how many times have you disappeared from the face of the earth and returned to the face of the earth because you found it fun being here? And what other dimensions have you been on in between your last reappearance here on Earth? And not your reincarnation, but reappearance. And do you always come back with the same body? Do you always reappear with the same body? You know, since nobody knows you, you know, you can choose any body you want, any nationality you want. You can choose anything that you want. You can be ageless. Now, you see, here is what is happening, I would say, with billions of people. Billions of people. There's 7 or 9 billion on Earth now. But billions of people on Earth do not age. And we don't know that they don't age because we cannot see them aging or not aging. Whatever they do is natural for them to do. Little children grow up. Oh my, how you've grown. My, how you changed in that shorter time, you know. And they haven't really changed. It's our perspective of them changed. We think because they're 5, they have to be so tall. Because they're 10, they got to be so tall. Oh, you look at some children, and they don't grow. Now, I looked at Bailey, the daughter of Rochelle, and I thought she was younger than she was because she wasn't tall. But she was, was she 9 years old? 9 years old. And she looked like she was maybe about 5 because she was short. But she didn't act like 5. She's a genius. But you see, you cannot always tell by looking at a person what age they are, or by their height, or by their outpicturing. You have to just look at the birth certificate or what they tell you. And sometimes they tell you interesting things too. Mm-hmm. Very interesting things. Now, agelessness is perfection. Do you have the capacity to be perfect? And you don't. You don't have the capacity to be perfect. You are perfect. There's no capacity about it. You are perfect. Now, do you have the ability to be aware of it? Yes, you have the ability to be aware of it. But are you aware of your perfection? Are you aware of your perfection that you, and I think this is one of the big telling points, everything that you agree to do, you give it your very best and you are perfect in it, you know? All my life, whenever I did anything, I did it my best. When I would scrub the kitchen floor, I would scrub the kitchen floor so it shone. And people would walk out on the kitchen floor while I was working on it. My brothers and sisters, you know how brothers and sisters are sometimes. And so I had to be creative and say, how can I keep them from coming on my clean kitchen floor while I'm working on it? And so I put a puddle of water on the kitchen floor, the whole kitchen floor. It was one big puddle of water. And they didn't want to walk on the puddle of water. So that gave me time to clean it up nice and make it perfect and then wipe it all dry and have it all just ideal. Now, quite likely it wasn't too good for the underflooring where the water soaked through, but it dried. And we were in the house for some 27 years in that house. And same kitchen floor. It didn't fall through. But it was clean. It was clean because I wanted to clean it, even if everybody gave me a hard time in cleaning it. It didn't bother me. It didn't bother me. And like I told you, when I shoveled the sidewalk, I'd shovel to the very edge of the sidewalk, not halfway or leaving part on there. It was clean as a whistle. It was so clean I didn't need cinders on my sidewalk to keep people from slipping. It was clean. But that's just my way. And so then, naturally, I expect everybody in my world to do that. And everyone in my world does it that way. Everyone in my world is a perfectionist. Everyone in my world does everything perfect. See, our agelessness is perfection. So when you are perfect in everything you do, you demonstrate your agelessness. And it's not a matter that you have to do everything perfect. It's everything you choose to do, you have to do perfectly. If you choose to do any task, you do it perfectly. Scrub the floor, typing. I was always a stickler for perfect typing. After my training in Silent Unity, it had me be even more of a stickler. But I always did everything perfect. And then when I went by newspaper work, I had to look at things a little differently. There, I had to get it out. And I had to speedily write columns and columns and columns of copy to go into the newspaper. Because I was the only one writing the stories. I was the only one taking the pictures. I had to write the stories and take the pictures and print the pictures and develop the pictures and engrave the pictures too. I even had to engrave them. And, you know, that was quite something. But being a young, dynamic, fantastic man, I was able to do all those things easily and quickly and fantastically. And I would work down at my shop from, say, 7 o'clock in the morning until 2 in the morning. But I liked my work. I liked what I did. I had this newspaper, which was a symbol of what I did. It was a symbol of what I had produced. Everybody else thought it was a symbol of what they produced, but it wasn't. Because I made it what I made it. And it was perfect. As I told you, when I was in Prairie du Chien, and I had the Courier Press there, the newspaper had never won things at all. And it had been just a little backwoods newspaper, but a nice one. And so I looked at the finest graphic newspaper in the United States, and that was the Christian Science Monitor. The Christian Science Monitor was the most beautiful graphically produced newspaper in the United States, giving all the awards by all of the newspaper association organizations. So I looked at how they laid out their publication, and I laid out my publication exactly like it. Exactly like it, with my headlines and my stories and my details. Well, it wasn't long that we started winning awards. And, of course, I improved on the National, the Christian Science Monitor, because I had to fit it into our program. And we won awards on even the changes that I made, which was quite lovely. But as soon as I left the newspaper and went out west to California, from Wisconsin, the newspaper became the normal newspaper again. The old hands were there, and they slopped it in. They didn't care whether they had a big headline on the headline or whether they had a small one. It fit the hole, and they put it in there. And if it didn't fit the hole, they took something out. Or if it needed something more, they'd stick a little filler in. They didn't care. They weren't interested in graphic layout, graphic display, but I was. So wherever I went, I carried out these things. These were the things that I cared about. See, agelessness is perfection. At each step along the way, I was as perfect as I understood myself to be. Now, everyone didn't agree with my perfection. Everyone didn't think that that was the way to be perfect. But it was. That was the way to be perfect. Be yourself to the ultimate degree of yourself. And when you are, everyone will appreciate it. My bosses on my different publications where I was just editor, they would, after a couple of months of my being there, they'd take off on a couple of month vacation and leave me in charge, you know? Because they saw by my dedication that I gave everything from the moment I was there until the moment I left. And even after I left, I gave everything. I gave everything. When I went to work in the West Dallas Star, it had a little rinky-dink desk, you know, a little cheesy job. You could buy at Target or something, you know, and it would wiggle and stuff. So I went down to the school board, and they sell desks from the school after a while because they want to get modern ones. And here, big oak desks, you know, giant, beautiful things, solid, everything, absolutely magnificent, $20. I couldn't carry it by myself, it was too heavy, but I got it to my office, and we got it in the office, and we put it in my area, and it was bigger than the boss's desk. It was bigger than, but he bought new stuff, you know. And then I needed a typewriter, and so I did the same thing. They offered me a typewriter in my work, and it was okay. You know, bum, 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 you had to pound on it to get anything to do. But I went down to the school board again, and I checked down there, getting rid of things. And then also the Army-Navy discard things had sales too. And I'd go there, and I'd pick up a beautiful desk chair and a beautiful credenza for behind the chair, the desk, and a typewriter and a typing table. And everybody looked at my office and said, wow, are you the publisher? Are you the owner here? Well, I took it with me at each job where I went to. And it was great. It was great. And everybody said, you're great. You know, if you have the best, you must be the best. If you do this for yourself, if this is what you believe is your image of yourself, then you must be that. And they gave me higher salaries. And then when I had my own newspapers, I had these in there too, but I never had time to sit at them when I had my own newspaper. I was busy outdoing everything. But you see, agelessness is perfection. Perfection in anything you do. Are you perfect in everything you do as far as you can see? Do you care about yourself? Do you care about every little thing? When I say to you, you're whole and perfect, do you say, oh, I hurt? When I say to you, you're a genius, you say, I wish I knew. You see, if I say these things to you, the least you can do is say, thank you, I accept. You know? Thank you, I accept. And then start demonstrating it. You know? Because my consciousness is behind your consciousness while you're demonstrating it, because that's what I say about you. I say you're whole and perfect. I say you're a genius. I say you're wonderful. You see, agelessness is perfection, and you flow with that perfection. And as you flow with that perfection, you could be 90, 180, you could be 500 years old, you could be 10 years old, it wouldn't matter. You still have that genius in you. I know as I was working with Christina's, Hengli's two children, and these two children are very lovely kids. But they were looking at me like this. Who is this guy? What's he bringing into this house? Who? What kind of character is he? He's a friend of Christina. He's not a friend of my dad's. I don't think he's a friend of mine. And then, of course, they saw how their father treated me, and so I immediately became okay. I became part of the family the minute Hengli demonstrated that he approved of me, and he approved of me beyond what he said, as he said to the children. And so, immediately, they started to listen to me. And so immediately, I started to tell them how wonderful they are. I hadn't the slightest idea how wonderful they were. But I knew how wonderful they would be if they were my creation. And so I decided to create them. And I created them wonderful. And I created them fantastic. And I created them gloriously. And they had 12 candles over the dining room table. and they lit six of them. And they said their dad told them only to light six when they don't have a big party. When they have a small party, just light half of them. And I said, I'm a big party, you know. Whenever I come around, you light all the candles. Well, the next time I came there for dinner, the kids lit all the candles, all of them, all 12. And I mean, that's a lot of candles to be burning for our dinner. And we had a super dinner. And the kids wanted me to sit next to them. They wanted me to be close to them. They wanted to serve me the wine. They wanted to serve me all the special foods. And then they wanted to say, now, make sure Dr. Marley has enough, or make sure Herb has enough, depending on what they were calling me, and make sure he's got enough, then I'll take what's left, you know. And so, I mean, you know, when you like yourself, when you are ageless, when you are perfect, then you go around and you say to other people how wonderful they are and how perfect they are, and they begin to demonstrate that for you. They begin to show that off. I went into the computer room at Christina's house, and I was working on the computer for some things for her. And the two kids had to come in there. They had to come in there. And they had to say, hey, you know, if you press this button, you do that, and you do this, do that. And I said, well, right now I'm doing this. And so, but they were just so wanting to help me, just so wanting to be near. Now, when you are perfect, and you expect perfection out of other people, if you do it in the right way, you are dearly loved. If you do it in the wrong way, by bawling people out, you know, then you're in trouble. This is why I get after you, that when you make a mistake, you say, I'm sorry, and then go on. But if you don't say, I'm sorry, I don't have any idea whether you are sorry or not. I think that you just don't care. And if you don't care, then I take the work away from you, and I do it myself or give it to somebody else. But the thing is, I have to hear that you are taking responsibility. Or you could say, hey, thanks for the suggestion. I'll do it better next time. Or how would you like it done? Or you follow me? You see, these are the things that are necessary when you're working with people and when people are working with you. Are you perfect?
Yes.
Then act like it. If somebody bawls you out or complains about your perfection, just say, sorry. Sorry I didn't reach up to your expectations. How would you like me to do it? I am here to do what you want done. I am here to do what you want done. I am here to do what you... I'm not here to do what I want done. If I'm anywhere to do what I want done, then I own the business. Then I run the show. You follow me? Now, Gertrude is a very independent lady. Gertrude doesn't like to be told what to do. Gertrude doesn't like anybody to tell her what she should be doing and how she should be doing it. Can you recognize the difficulty she had with her music teacher? Her music teacher said, do this, do this. And she said, well, I can't do that. I can't reach that. The music teacher said, do it. And she did it. And then she joins a choir. The choir with this one woman over this... How many people are in the choir? 300, 400?
I don't know.
1,000? Huh?
90.
100 is a good number. So 100 people in this choir. And this woman stands down there and tells 90 people what to do. I mean, that takes a lot of guts in the first place. You have to believe in yourself. You don't necessarily have to know what you're doing, but you got to believe in yourself. And then you project that belief to your people. Now, they're there on your behest. You're the director, and you give them permission to be there. And if they don't want to cooperate with you, out. You will not argue with anybody about what your program is of presenting the choir. And Gertrude had to swallow hard a lot of times when the choir director said, do this, do that, do the other thing. And that is tough. But you see, before you can ever be a good leader, you must be a good follower. Before you can ever be your ageless, perfect self, you have to be aware of what ageless means. Ageless means... Give me a word, any word.
Perfection.
Yeah. We've done that. Ageless means, let's just say, non-possession. If you possess something, you're going to age fast. You're going to age very fast. If you judge, oh, you're going to age really fast. And what else, Ellen?
Unconditional.
Ah, yes. If you have conditions about your relationship to the world, if you're not unconditionally loving, you're going to have lots. And you see, all of these things, they're simple little things, but the Tates, everlasting, they were possessed by relationships. The boy fell in love with a girl and married her, had two beautiful children, and then he wanted them to enjoy eternal life too. But of course, if they had done it, the two children would remain 8 and 10 years old all forever. You know, they would never come to adulthood. They would never come to fruition in their thinking. Now, a 17-year-old Tate was, what's his name, Jeremy?
Jesse.
Jesse. The 17-year-old Jesse, he was always wanting to, you see. And if he could have been 20 or 21, if any of them all could have been 20 or 21, it would have been great. Now, the old man and woman, they weren't old. They were only maybe in their 40s, you know. But what was their attitude? Their attitude was that there's so much in life they'd like to do, but they can't. Because they cannot do something in which a person is human can do. Because they are beyond human. They are invincible. They are something that cannot be destroyed. They're something that cannot be killed. They're something that cannot do anything. You follow me? Now think of this. They could have lived without food. They could have lived without air. They could have lived without water. Because they are immortal. You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that. They didn't know these little ramifications in the blessing that they had. But with that blessing came a fear in their heart that if anyone finds out about it, they will think that they're crazy. Well, that's in their mind. If they had in their mind the thought, if anyone finds out about this, they will be amazed. They will want to worship us, perhaps, but not kill us. They'll want to worship, because they can't be killed, so nobody's going to want to kill them, really. But they want to worship them. And are they ready in their consciousness to be worshipped? If every person came along and took a drink of that, or if the man was able to sell it to the people who deserved it.
Yeah.
Now, did you notice? Did you notice that compassionate young girl? Did you notice that compassionate young girl? What was her name?
Winifred.
Winnie? Did you notice that compassionate young girl? Did you notice the compassionate young girl? You're not saying anything.
Yes.
Where? Where?
When the grandmother died.
Ah, so. When the grandmother was dying, she was compassionate. She wanted to give water to the grandmother. She knew it would give the grandmother eternal life, but to live in her decrepit, ancient body that was ill, so she would suffer illness eternally? Is that? I mean, what a strength of character that portrayed in her. You follow me?
Yeah.
What a strength of character. Now, there truly, it would not be a blessing for her to give that to that woman. That would be what?
Possession.
Hell.
Well, possession.
And possession.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be hell and also possession. But you see, she passed the test of possession. And you see, you heard her speaking to her mother. And her mother said, you haven't changed. I always want you to be my little girl. And she says, I almost did. I almost did. Can you imagine that? Now, you see, she will be a little girl all of her life, all of eternity. And she would live in that consciousness, which is not a bad consciousness, if you want to be creative with it. But how many times can you climb the steps of the Eiffel Tower? You know, how many times can you look at a beautiful scene and enjoy it? How many times can you do all these things if you're not going to be possessed by it? And if you're possessed by it, it's even worse. Living in agelessness is quite something. All of us right now are ageless. All of us right now are eternal, immortal. All of us right now are fantastic. But agelessness is perfection because there is nothing to compare it with. There's nothing to compare agelessness with. Could they be age? And the Tate story was a good story, because the grandmother, she would be ageless in her age. The parents, they were ageless in their age, the boys' parents. The boys were ageless in their age. You see? And the boy who had the children, he wanted to be involved in life. He wanted to be active in life. He wanted to do things. He wanted to fight battles and fight wars and do these things. Now, his drinking of the fountain didn't make him more compassionate. It only made him more tragic, because he couldn't love on the same level that he loves forever. Could you imagine him loving an old lady, which was his wife, who got old? And the old lady would say, "Dear, you never change. You're always so young." And that would be hard, wouldn't it?
I would be unconditional love.
On her part. And his part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, more on his part, because if she became old.
Well, no, the thing is, the difficulty there is that he knows she's going to die.
Yeah.
And he won't have her forever. And he'll have to go find a new one. And maybe he'll just not marry, just have relationships with somebody for 10 years and then move on, which perhaps is what he has to do. And, you know, it seems to me that if he drank of this water of eternal life and he had children, his children should have been at least half eternal life. You know what I mean? They should have been at least touched by that eternal life gene or chromosome that was in him, you know.
Half God.
Hmm?
Like half gods.
Half God. Well, I didn't want to say that.
No, I'm not going to.
Now, to define perfection requires there be an archetypal prototype of itself. Now, what is the archetype of perfection? What is the archetype of perfection? You say, well, I'm not going to look at you, then I don't have to tell you the answer. But what is the archetype of perfection? Ingeborg, what is the archetype of perfection?
How define perfection?
How we what?
How can I define perfection?
Well, that's what we're trying to do right now. To define perfection requires that there be an archetype, prototype of itself. What would be an archetype of perfection?
An is.
Yeah, well, you cannot say an individual thing. Yeah. Because it's different for every person, every place, every thing, every being.
It depends on the thoughts I have when I do something.
Yeah, it depends on the thoughts you have, but it's an archetype. It's a prototype.
Perfect.
Now, what is a prototype of a car?
For wheels, engines that drive.
Okay. A prototype of a car is something that has a body, four wheels, and an engine, and goes, you know. So.
But that, it needs somebody to drive it.
I'm sorry?
It needs somebody to drive it.
No. The archetype prototype of a car is a prototype of a car that can be driven, but it doesn't need someone to drive it. I mean, if you go to the design studios of the different automobile dealers, they will make an archetypal prototype of a car, and they will have a perfect engine for it, and they will have perfect wheels on it, and perfect everything, but it will never be driven. Because it is not the finished product. It is just the prototype. The prototype is the symbol of it. Now, Ellen, what do you have on your computer? You usually have a little symbol, you have a, what do you call it, icon. Yeah. And what does the icon have on it usually?
A sign.
Sylvia, what does it have on it?
A symbol.
No, no. What does the icon usually have on it?
An arrow.
And what does the arrow mean?
It's a shortcut to something.
It's a shortcut to something. It's a shortcut to the real thing. And you see, a prototype is a shortcut to the real thing. The prototype is not the real thing. You can get rid of the prototype and you'll never get rid of the car. Because the car is the real thing. The prototype is the design or the idea behind it. Now that's kind of interesting, isn't it? So, agelessness is perfection because there is nothing to compare it with, and to define perfection requires there be an archetype prototype of itself. How do we have an archetype prototype of agelessness or something like perfection, agelessness? Agelessness is perfection. Perfection's got to be of something. The archetype or prototype has to be of something. Now, what is it of?
Of a seed.
Yeah, no, no. It's an idea. It's an idea. It's an archetype. Well, and what is the idea we're talking about here?
The archetype of the perfect.
Agelessness. So we're talking about agelessness as the concept, the idea.
Yeah.
Okay, now, what is this idea, agelessness?
Perfect idea.
Yeah, but...
Water.
No, it's not...
Walk on water?
No, water. Just the liquid.
Louder, please.
Water. The ocean.
Yeah, water, the ocean. But, okay, go on with your statement. Anything?
That is always.
Well, agelessness is not water. Agelessness is agelessness. Agelessness means that which does not age. But the Tate Everlasting, they were now ageless. They were ageless at 17. They were ageless at 24. They were ageless at 42, whichever their ages were. Now, that was their agelessness. There are, say, four agelessnesses there for each person involved, whatever age they had. They remained that age forever, yeah?
They were capsules, frozen.
They were captive, frozen, in that particular age. And that's a good phrase. That's what agelessness is. You are captive in it and you are frozen in it. Now, do you want to be captive and frozen in agelessness? Interesting concept, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, so Tate Everlasting was not as far out as we might think it. But what does it really say? It says, where are you in your consciousness? Where are you in your thought about agelessness? Do you want to be like the old woman and in her sick body have it forever? Or do you want to be like the man who felt that he made no contribution to the world? I mean, they wanted to go west. They wanted to start a family. They wanted to start a home. Well, do it. Do it. And then as soon as the conditions change where the people are not accepting of you, sell your house and move. Or just plain move and start another. Because you're starting out at that same age. You're rebuilding a house when you're 40 years old. You're rebuilding a house when you're 40 years old. And you're 40 years old all the time. So you're rebuilding a house when you're 40 years old. It makes no difference, does it? Now, they didn't have to take anything in their wagon, because most of the things in their wagon were from not 40 years old, but from another decade, another century back, 30 years before, 40 years before, and it was no longer beneficial. I mean, they had cars, you know? They had houses, they had people. And, yeah?
So they were frozen?
They were frozen.
At the time.
Right.
And the time around them was changing, so they were
actually... Yeah. The time around them was changing.
So they were developing and learning from their environment
uh-huh.
at the time.
Now, you see, this is part of the discussion on agelessness that we're having. Do you want to be ageless in an, if you will, aging society, in a society that is ever changing? Do you want to be ageless in an area where things are changing? Now, for instance, we say of an old person who is 100 years old, and we say they were born in 1905, and so in 1905, it didn't matter. Let's go until 1920. So in 1920, they were a young person. In 1920, cars were just taking off, and different things were just starting. Electricity was being spread around the world. Telephone, and telegraph were still in their infancy. All these things were brand new. Now, you see, they saw those things escalate. Now, that's human nature to see it escalate. But, and then of course, it's our incredulity that says to us that it's unbelievable that we would see it go the full cycle to where there are no radios, there are no televisions, just a little button in the head, or we just think our thought, or we walk over the water, or we do things, you know, or we live without food, live without water, live without air. Ha ha, you know. Are there societies that do this? Yes. Are there planets where they have no air, where they have no water, where they have no food, and people live? Well, they can't be the same kind of people we are, of course, but they live. Now, what would you do? What would you do if you were packed off to some planet that had those conditions and you were prepared to live in that planet? So you'd have to bring enough food for yourself. You'd have to bring enough water. You'd have to bring enough air to breathe so that you could be in that society that has no air, no food, no water. I mean, that could be quite something, yes?
But wouldn't you go to this society? Exactly. You would have the awareness. You don't have to bring anything. You would just be in yourself and be that which you are going into. You would have that.
What you're saying is extremely delightful, charming, and so forth, but I can't hear a word of it. I'm sorry, would you like to speak up?
I was saying when.
Come on, speak up.
When you go to the society.
When you go to a society of that nature.
No food, yes.
Yeah.
And you have just expressed we were bringing, we have to bring our food and what have you. No, because if you would go or want to go to that society, you would be like that society.
Yeah.
You cannot go from one which is lower into one which is higher. You have the awareness of the higher than you are
That is well said and desirably said, but not true. Because when you want to... Well, now, for instance, this young man in London, he wanted to be on the king's, the queen's legal council. And I said, you can never be on the Queen's legal council until you prepare yourself for it. And he said, well, what must I do? And I said, well, in the first place, you must speak with the perfect English brogue and the perfect English literature. And then you must speak up, because in your Nigerian voice, you're speaking so low, nobody can hear what you're saying, and it doesn't make any difference what you say, because nobody can hear it. So you have to speak up. Now, the lords of the court speak up. The lords of the court are confident in themselves. Now, you don't have any of that. You probably would never fit into that unless you wanted to change.
Now, that's what she exactly said.
No. Can he change?
Yes.
Please, Ellen. The answer is no. Can he change and be a member of the royal court? No. Because he is so indoctrinated in his Nigerian way of speaking and doing things, for him to take that step is a giant leap. And he has surrounded himself by people who are of the Nigerian consciousness, who would want the money that he earns to be sent back home and so forth, so he couldn't be using it to buy the clothing he needs to be of the royal court and to get the education. He said, well, I can't afford to go to school and get that education. And I said, well, here's what you can do. And I gave him a total program that he could apply and prepare himself for the royal court. But for him to do that would take so much motivation, contrary to his own background, that it's fairly unlikely that he's going to do it. Yes. Yes.
We are in the reality now. I was concepting.
I'm sorry?
We are now in the reality. You are giving an example in the reality.
Yes. And you're giving an example in the reality that you would change your eating habits and your breathing habits and your drinking habits to go to a planet that doesn't do it.
I would have the awareness already, before I would want to go to this planet.
Exactly.
I agree with you.
We're ageless, we're timeless, we are moving. We are going to something which is beyond what I can think now.
But if you were that responsible and that's beautiful, then you could just see yourself on that planet.
Well, whatever.
I have created it for myself to see myself there.
You have just...
I have not created myself
What have you created yourself to do?
I was responding to a prompting of yours that suggested food,
go ahead.
Bring your food,
Your bags. Yeah.
So I said, you are immortal, you are timeless, you are eternal, you are ageless.
Yes.
How? You have got the consciousness and the awareness. You are already creating and doing and making. So, you don't take a bag full of food.
Here,
you go.
Well, hey, I agree with you.
I agree with you.
I am merely making a statement of irritation to get your thinking in that direction. Now, you jumped into that direction very quickly, and that's great. But you are an exception. The average person would have no interest in going there.
Look, the astronauts. What they're doing, they're going up in space and they don't take any food and they're trained in it and they can do it because they have the motivation to do it. So the moment somebody has that concept of that planet or the possibility to go there, they can only conceive of it when they are ready for it. I believe that same thing like
well,
that.
Well, yes, I think that's lovely and that quite possibly is true, but it's not necessarily true.
No, I'm not saying that it's
necessary. You look at the population of the Earth and how many people on Earth are ready to be immortal, are ready to live eternally. Ingeborg, you were going to say something before. What were you going to say?
For instance, the guy in London, first of all...
Now, just a minute, let me get to where you are talking.
The lawyer in London.
Oh, the lawyer in London, thank you.
Mm-hmm. He is grown up with... Nigerian ideas and the way of living. He has to frequent the most ignorant people
he can.
Has, and leaving much behind this Nigerian area. He knows the talk in the Algerian area, but whenever possible, think only in the British.
So what you're saying is You're known by the people you associate with.
Yes.
So if he wants to be in this high court stuff, he should associate with these high court lawyers, and he should associate with them and be around them.
Yes.
If he wants to play golf with them, he has to go play golf with them.
Yes.
And he has to learn how to play golf with them and how to lose.
Yes.
So that they can win.
Mm-hmm.
And they can keep him as a friend. He has to learn what the rules and the regulations are of the program. And yes, and is he willing to do that?
That's the point.
And
that's the only point.
Yes, okay, is he willing to do it? And I would say, if he's willing to do it, he'll be a success. But the thing is, there are so many things that'll keep him from doing it, because he has to learn to speak differently, he has to learn to dress differently. And I had him stand up, and I said, now stand up straight, put up your chin, put your chest up, pull your tummy in, pull your butt in, you know, and stand up straight. Now, I said, now you're an English gentleman. Now you're standing like an English. The kids were raised in the English schools, in the what do they call those schools? They're special schools where they train royalty. They train the etiquette. Yeah, they train them in the etiquette of the British nobility, the noble schools, you know. And not everyone can go there. Not everyone can afford it. Not everyone wants it. What?
That's the point, yeah.
Yeah, not everybody wants it. But the thing is, they have all that preparation for being on the court. And he is starting out from nothing. He's brilliant. Brilliant, got a mind fantastic. He did excellent in the courses, but now he's got to break in to that other realm.
He can work.
You're arguing me on details, and no, with details. And but what I'm trying to do is to tell you a point here. When we have a motivation to do something, we can do it.
Yes.
When we have the desire to do it, we can do it. And when we have the desire to go to another planet where they have no air, water, or food, we would certainly be rather unusual people to want to go there.
Exactly.
And so if we are that unusual person that wants to go there, then oftentimes we practice here not eating and not drinking and not breathing and things like that, and in preparation for it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people die and some people succeed. But the thing is, if you really want to do anything, you can do it. I told you my walking through the fire, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And the smoke and so forth. And that wasn't just once, that was a number of times. And it's fascinating. It's very fascinating. But again, I know we're talking details and we're not talking details. I didn't want to get too tied up on details. And actually, it's kind of distressing for me to talk to you because I can't hear you. And so therefore, I'm not understanding exactly what you're saying when you're saying what you're saying. But that's okay. I don't mind that. It's time for us to call this to a halt. We have not finished it, but we'll call it to all. It is 53 minutes. We're supposed to be 50 minutes. I can see perfection as an ideal, and agelessness is perfection. I can see perfection as an ideal. So we don't want the little arrow going up to the icon. We want the actual icon, which represents the total, what do you call, the actual program. And if we erase the actual icon of the actual program, we erase the actual program. If we erase the icon with the arrow on it, it's just pointing to it, it doesn't erase the program. So these are things that we want to think about. We want to think about what is perfection and how agelessness is perfection. And it is good. Now, we have seen the Tuck Everlasting. We'll speak more about it, I'm sure. But in that, we have seen how possession of relationships made it an intolerable situation. An intolerable situation. And she was brought back. She went away for 2 years every once in a while, and she'd come back to be with her boys because she remembered her boys at that age, and they were still that age. And so she was possessed by them too. Now, interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Interesting. And We might just throw this barb in before we quit at this particular one. Is it ever correct to kill another person?
No.
Now, she didn't perhaps intend to kill him.
No, she didn't.
But she did.
Mm-hmm. She just wanted to stop him.
Yeah. But if in stopping someone we kill him, is it ever acceptable to do it?
No,
and that's a value. That's a value, like not eating, drinking, or breathing, you know. That's a value.
Yes. For instance, it is, you have the intention to do something that person is not...
You wanted to stop it.
Yes, to stop
okay,
it.
Okay, that's
true. In the process, you don't know how your idea ends up.
Well, if you do it with love, you don't kill them.
Right.
If you do it with anger, with tension, with irritation, with all those sort of things, bad stuff happens.
Yes.
They were all amazed. You killed him. Remember, they were all amazed. And she said she couldn't go to jail because she'd never die. So, think about these things. It's good stuff. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.